MechCast, Tuesday, June 12th, 2012. Hey, MechGeeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for MechGeeks by MechGeeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, I am back from vacation, well-rested, and jumping right into the thick of all things Macintosh and Apple and MacGeekery, because yesterday was the kickoff of WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference in San Francisco, and Tim Cook and company kicked off the keynote, and as expected, they announced like a bazillion things. I'm sure many of you have watched the keynote, you've gone through the blogs and notes and stuff like that, you know a lot of the nitty-gritty and details about something that we've done on the MacCast for the past few years now. Is we do a little wrap-up synopsis analysis of what we think was significant coming out of the event, what we thought was good, what we thought was bad, and by we, I mean we do that as the Three Amigos. And if you haven't heard this on the MacCast before, I invite my friends Victor Cahiao from the Typical Shutterbug podcast, also of the Rangefinder podcast, used to do Typical Mac User podcast until recently, and Ken Ray of Mac OS Ken to come on, and we just have a great time chatting about what happened at the keynote, and hopefully you enjoy listening to it. So we're going to do that again in this episode. Of course, before I get into all of that, I need to take a quick moment and recognize a couple of our show sponsors. First, Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You know, I have been talking about Notebook on the MacCast for a while. Great application. I use it constantly. And one of the reasons I use it is because it's much more than a note-taking app. So the name is Notebook. A lot of people think it's just for taking notes, but it really does so much more because there's so much functionality packed into it. And the thing I like to think about it as is it's more like a project organizer. Like a physical notebook, you can take a project and you can collect and gather all of the bits and pieces you need for that project in there. So that would include notes and things like that, but it also would include maybe putting in some images. You can drop in images. You can drop in hyperlinks from web pages, stuff you maybe need to go back and research later. You can put in clippings. We've talked about the clippings feature in that, where you can select a piece of text from an email or a web page and clip that right into your notebook. You can add contacts from your address book. So if you need to follow up with somebody, you can have all their information there. You can add in due dates and do checklists. And what's cool about due dates and checklists is you can even have it set up so that they're synced with iCal. So when you create an event or an item in your notebook that has a due date, it'll show up in your iCal. Or if it's a checklist, it'll show up as a to-do item in iCal. And when you do that, it adds these things called stickers in the margins. And what's cool about the stickers is you can right-click on them or control-click on them, and you can get more information. So things where you might have a clipping from a web page or an email, you get a snapback icon, meaning you can jump back right to the web page where that clipping came from. So if you need to go back and get more information from that, it makes it really easy. With email clippings, it's even cooler because you can link back right to the original message in your email. You can reply directly to the person who sent you that email right from Notebook. You can get the date and additional information, the from information and the subject from the email that clipping came from right inside Notebook. You don't have to leave Notebook to get that either. If you throw in an address book contact, you just drag an address a contact from your address book and put it into your notebook, you get all of their information right there from the sticker. So that would include their phone number, their email address, all that sort of stuff. It just makes it really easy to pull all of that stuff together, and it ends up making it a really powerful application, far beyond just a note-taking app. So you should check it out. They have free trials available on their website. They also have an iPad app, so you can sync and take all of your notebooks on with you on the go. Great stuff at circusponies.com, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. And we have a new sponsor here on the MacCast, and it's Apollon. They make an application for iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad called Pimp Your Screen. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. But basically, What happens is this app gives you access to custom-designed wallpapers and home screen images you can use on your home screen and your lock screen on your iOS devices. These are images that are original designs. They're created by Apollon's team of designers. You get new images added frequently, so as they update the application, you're going to get new images that you can pick and choose from, and they're updated at no additional cost. So once you buy the app, you get the new images as they add them, and they're constantly adding new stuff. But it goes beyond just wallpapers and screen images. They also, in the app, allow you to customize those. They have a home screen maker and a lock screen maker and different elements that you can overlay over your backgrounds to give you all kinds of variations and unique effects. So you can do this both with your lock screen and your home screen images. They have things like shelves, which look like virtual little shelves that fall in under your app icons. So when you're on your home screen, it looks like all your app icons are sitting on little shelves. They also have little skins and glow effects and shadows and edge effects you can put behind your icons to make them pop a little bit more. And you can also put in separate backgrounds, say for your lock screen, behind the clock, behind the slide to unlock button. You can even add things like calendars. And so you can have the current month calendar right there on your lock screen when you bring it up and you're looking at the time and stuff like that. So it can be very convenient. And the way all this works is you put it all together through the app, through their little lock screen maker or their home screen maker, get it set up and looking exactly the way you like it, fully customized. And then you save the image to your camera roll, you go into your settings and you set your lock screen and stuff like that. You don't have to do any Photoshop work. There's no messing around. The application handles it all for you. And you can even get a preview before you save it with the icons in place. So they put little sample icons in there so you can see what it's going to look like once you've actually applied it before you even leave the app, so you know exactly what you're going to get. And right now, the application is 50% off in the App Store, so it's just 99 cents. If you want to check it out, it's called Pimp Your Screen for iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. They actually also have a Mac version. It's by Apollon, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get right into our WWDC wrap-up with Ken Ray and Victor Cajiao. It's the Three Amigos talking WWDC. Enjoy. Hey, Ken. Hey, Victor.
Adam.
Hey, here we go again. It's been way too long. I think we've been long overdue for one of these Three Amigos shows, right?
It has been a while.
Yeah. For sure. It's been too long, actually. Yeah. Tres Amigos.
For the Spanish people. I don't remember when the last one it was. We didn't do one at Macworld because Victor was feeling a bit under the weather. So it's actually, I think, we haven't done one this year.
Wow. You're right. And this is the first one.
First one of the year. Correct. Well, we got to do them more frequently. But for sure, something that has kind of, I was mentioning this to you guys, I think it's almost become a tradition that we do one after WWDC. Because normally I'm in Pismo Beach on vacation.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you weren't this year.
No, I was there last week because they moved WWDC, I guess, a week. We always go the first week of June.
You yield a lot of power, Adam, apparently.
WWDC was... Yeah, I don't think they moved it for me. I have a feeling there was something else going on in Moscone and they couldn't get the date. Or they needed a few more moments to pile on one more thing to talk to us about.
Jeez. What a marathon.
Unbelievable. I was going to look and see if this was the longest keynote Apple's ever done. I don't know.
Well, and I expected a bunch of demos, you know. I thought, oh, it's going to be long, but it's going to be long because of demos. And wow, was I wrong.
Ken, you were saying something?
I don't remember. It was long. It was a long keynote.
Yeah.
There were lots of films.
You know, did you think there were really a lot, though? Because, I mean, they had the sort of little skit at the beginning with Siri, yeah. which was kind of hilarious.
That was cute. I actually thought that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of Siri warming up the crowd.
Maybe I'm wrong about there being a lot. Maybe it just felt like, I don't know. I feel like a horrible person. I am a terrible person. Okay, let's just get that out of the way now. I was disappointed. I was disappointed in today's show or today's keynote. I was. Wow. Yes. And it's not that everything's not cool. I mean, everything that they talked about was cool. And I know you're probably going to get into what all of it is. And I think we should get into what all of it is. Okay. But I was disappointed. This is like a video of baby's ninth step. Baby's first step is cool. Second step is kind of neat because you know the first one wasn't a one-off. Third step, okay, we pretty much got this walking thing down now. We're going to one operating system, but we're not being told that we're going to one operating system. We're going to one operating system, but we're not being told. For some reason, we're not getting Siri. For some reason, we're not getting Siri on the Mac. I'm sorry. I'm just going to go ahead and just out everything that bothered me right now. And then we can talk about how great a lot of stuff was, because a lot of it was really fantastic. We're not getting Siri on the Mac. And I don't understand why we're not getting Siri on the Mac, because we're obviously headed towards Siri on the Mac. We're obviously headed towards one operating system. My complaint about Microsoft trying to take over the digital living room has always been that they wanted to kick down your door and replace everything. And Apple has been really smart because over the past 10 years, they've just sort of, you know, here's this little thing, here's a little bit, here's this little thing, here's a little bit. And I know they're not the kind of company that's going to telegraph their roadmap. But you know what? I mean, Dad drove us from Boston to Anaheim. Pretty much when we hit the Anaheim city limits, you can go ahead and say, all right, kids, we're going to Disneyland. I mean, you're not going to fool anybody at this point into thinking that this is not where we're going. And for some reason, today it just bothered me. It feels like, it's the future soon. It's how soon is now. It was all fantastic stuff. It was all fantastic stuff. And yet I left feeling like, well, we knew that this was going to happen. Do you see what I mean? Am I completely off base on this?
No, I get where you're going. I'm curious about two things. I'm curious if you're happy, because I don't know that everybody's happy about Apple moving to a single operating system. I think a lot of people are still tentative about it, and maybe even Apple themselves, as evidenced by what you're talking about. And the other side of it is that I frankly just don't know. I think you're very much right. I just don't know, in looking at the hardware and stuff that they announced today and some of the other things that they're doing, that even Apple's ready to get there at this point.
Yeah,
so
no,
while it feels like a bunch of baby steps, I'm agreeing with you there. I don't know that that's necessarily not the right path for them to be taking at this point. And the backside of that is that, in my opinion, a lot of the technologies that they did show off and the cool things that I'm kind of excited and jazzed about from this keynote are things that I think put Apple ahead of the competition, or even further ahead of the competition in a lot of ways, especially on the iOS side, than their competitors.
And sure.
So I don't know that there's any, maybe that's part of the problem. I don't know that there's a lot of pressure for Apple to plow forward.
And at the same time, I don't want them to hurry it. I mean, I really don't. I don't know. I mean, there were things like the Game Center thing.
Yeah.
Where they showed somebody playing a game on iOS. I'm ruining the whole thing. I'm blowing the order out of this whole thing. I apologize. Where they showed somebody playing a game on iOS, and the person on iOS pings the person on the Mac and says, do you want to play this game with me? Now, of course, this does right now require that you have a Mac version of the game and an iOS version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going away.
Sure.
At some point, that's going away. And I guess, when you ask me, am I happy about it? I don't know if I'm happy about it. Am I happy that the sun's going to come out tomorrow or that it's going to rain the day after that? I mean, there are going to be things about it that we're not going to like. There are going to be things about it that are going to be difficult. But what this is really all about, and I know I talked about this last year around this time when they did like natural scrolling and it looked more and more like iOS, was looking like the Mac OS. What this is really all about is just access to your data everywhere, anyway, every yep. surface. Look at all that stuff, right? And yeah. the idea of having one operating system for one and one operating system for another, when, I mean, they're now syncing up, for all intents and purposes, they're now syncing up the Mac OS and the iOS updates. They're not happening at the exact same time, but they are both happening annually at this point. They're looking more and more like each other at this point. Even if they don't end up being the exact same operating system, to the end user, they are going to look like the exact same operating system.
Well,
and I guess,
here.
Go ahead.
We sat here for 4 years, the three of us, thinking about what are they going to do with the data center? What are they going to do with the data center? This is what they're doing with the data center, guys. And we knew, right. I mean, we knew it was coming. We kept on talking about an ecosystem. We kept on talking about bringing them together. And now, I mean, it's being brought together. I mean, I really believe the Mountain Lion, the last version of an OS in the traditional sense that we're going to see on a Mac computer. You know, in the sense that we know it, you know, behind the doors, what's behind the curtain, getting inside the, you know, the back. I don't think it'll be the same after Mountain Lion.
No, you see, I personally am afraid to say that because I really thought Lion would be the last one. So now I can't make that bet again. I've already lost everything on Lion.
Well, and isn't really the bigger picture here, though, that I think you're alluding to this already, and I'm just going to come right out and say it. I mean, the operating system and the devices and the things, everything is just sort of merging and fading away and just becoming, like you said it already, Ken, it's access to your information from different things.
Right.
And they're all, for all intents and purposes, traditionally what you could call a computer. And when you look at its processor and memory and storage and whether the storage is in the cloud or wherever it may be. But what Apple's going for ultimately is a ubiquity of, hey, this is just my stuff and here's how I access it. And I'm going to access it this way over here and that way over there and with this thing over here and with that thing over there. But I think the end game for Apple is that all this technology, and they've always wanted this to happen, that the technology fades into the background.
Right.
And it's just experiences that you're having with these technology devices.
Appliance computing.
Yeah. And so they're really, once again, but so getting back to what you were talking about and maybe where some of the frustration is coming from and where some of the slow movement is coming from, I see two things. It's one, that Apple seems to be in this type of game that we're talking about, in my opinion, Apple is so far ahead of a lot of their competition in a majority of theirs. Now, there's, I think, companies that have little bits and pieces that are neck and neck with Apple, but as far as the whole package, this whole concept, I think Apple's getting it more than anybody else. But a lot of people look at that and go, well, they're moving too slow or they're behind or whatever. But I think there's a longer end game that they're after, and they're being very cautious because they're developing this whole new paradigm, this whole new way of doing this, especially in the consumer space. And I think in a lot of ways, they're still kind of finding their way, and you know, they're still trying to figure it all out. So they're playing around with this, that, and the other. But I think you're right. I think the end game, we're eventually getting there. It just sounds like they're not ready to play that hand or tip that direction and say, here's where we're headed. But Apple's never done that, right?
No.
And
right.
I think
and
said that earlier as well. I mean, Apple has never said, hey, here's the finish line and here's where we're going to, but it's going to take us 5 years to get there.
Right.
They're not going to come out and say that.
Right. Don't misunderstand me. It's just, I mean, that's my level of frustration today. I mean, it became more obvious than ever that that's where they're going. I mean, if you have been somebody who has been holding on to the idea that, no, they're always going to be two separate things. I mean, they practically announced it today, but it's the practically announced it part that gets to me because then we're just going to sit and wait. And, you know, next year there'll be another, like, you know, quarter reveal about where we're headed. And then the year after that, there'll be another quarter reveal about where we're headed. And it's just, you know, I mean, there was a lot that happened today that was really fantastic. And there are certainly, if you want to read it that way, there were certainly things that indicated that was where they were headed. Not just the Game Center thing, although the Game Center thing was the most obvious thing to me. The Tabs in the Cloud, is that what it's called?
Yep.
That's another fantastic thing, and I know I'm just screwing up order here left and right.
No,
one of the things that they announced.
There's no order, though. You know why? Because everybody already knows this stuff.
That's true.
By the time we get this out, everybody who's a fan of this show
absolutely.
Or your show or any of our shows knows that, you know, they were following it along with us earlier today. So
you see, that's sort of where I am. I'm honestly at this place right now of trying to figure out how to write Tuesday's edition of macOS Ken. And sort of like, I think I'm just going to bullet point the keynote and then get any reaction stuff that I can find. Because, I mean, you're right. I mean, I was one of the only people I know who was not following a live blog of the keynote because I had something else that I had to do and made those plans before I realized, you know, when the keynote was. So I had something else that I had to do today. But honestly, I enjoyed it more than any keynote, except for the ones that I've physically been to. And I think I've been to two of the WWDC keynotes and, you know, some of the Macworld keynotes back in the day and then a couple of special events and what have you. I think today's was the one, as far as like having to sit at home, having like not being able to be at Moscone, today was the one I enjoyed the most because I wasn't following the live blogs as they were coming out live. So I got the 2-hour delivery in about 20 minutes.
Did you watch the actual keynote, the video yet?
I have since watched the video, yes. I have since watched the video. But, I mean, as far as I didn't have to sit there for 2 hours hitting refresh and trying not to hit refresh, you know, because they're going to update automatically, you know, that kind of thing.
Just real briefly, I wouldn't mind talking about just the pacing and the keynote itself if we're ready to move on.
I apologize. There was one thing really quickly. Tabs in the cloud. For people who have not, for whatever reason, heard about it or seen it, this is a really wonderful thing where if you are, I assume it's going to work from the Mac to iOS devices, although what they talked about was working from iOS devices to the Mac, where if I'm on my iPhone or my iPad and I'm reading something, when I move to my Mac, I can then, there's a little button up in the corner of Safari that's going to have a little cloud, like the iCloud thing. And you click on it, and it'll actually show you all of your open tabs across all of your devices.
Yep.
So if I'm reading something on the bus, and then I walk from the bus home, when I get home, I can go to my Mac, and I don't have to sit there and finish reading what I was reading on my iPhone or email myself. And this is one of the things that I do most commonly. I email myself a link from, you know, whatever I'm reading to my Mac so that I can read it on my computer. And that's just not even a thing anymore. And that, again, is about having access to your information in every place. And I'm just wondering how long it's going to be that you're still going to need two different operating systems to do the same, especially where they're trying to marry things now across all the devices. It seems to me that, you know, the need for separate operating devices is going away or will go away.
I think they're going to do it until we are just like anticipating what it is that we're going to need to be shared next time. I mean, this time around, I'm sure I know that for me, being able to do the shared photo streams, you know, ad hoc, one picture, that was something that I really wanted. And so now, and they just like, okay, here it is. They gave it to me. I didn't have to ask for it. I didn't have to think about it. Just here it is. You can pick groups. You can pick one picture, every picture, whatever. So I think they're going to keep doing this spoon feeding, as you're calling it, until we're just like, we just assume, oh, that's just going to be there in the next OS. Of course, Passbook is going to evolve into money payments. Of course. That's just the step number
that
one.
Too, huh?
Oh, are you kidding me? It's a done deal. You might as well, like Ken's saying, it's almost like we're not going to let the other shoe drop, but we've dropped it already. You know, Passbook is your digital wallet. It's just how to get us used to it, you know? So we are going all over the place, but yeah.
And in fairness, that is something that I have always applauded Apple for doing. It just feels like after however many years, I mean, the Trojan horse hit our living rooms or our computers 11 years ago now with the introduction of iTunes. And then with, you know, the iPod, and then with the iTunes Store. And then it's been building. And I don't know why today I wanted a tiny bit more. Either that or I wanted the SDK for the television. I would have settled for either.
Or
and maybe that's my problem. I didn't get what I wanted, so I'm just sitting here pouting.
And some of it is repackaging. I mean, the series stuff. I mean, Adam, I know we should go in some kind of order, but, you know, a lot of it is just like repackaging.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have an order. I have an outline that I can take us down. The one thing that I kind of threw to later that we can move to the beginning if we want is sort of the things that didn't get announced. So I don't know if you want to talk about this. Since we brought up the Apple TV SDK already, or just the Apple TV in general, I mean, that was one of those rumors that was out there that, you know, many people were expecting something to happen. Sorry, go ahead, Ken.
No, my apologies. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, frankly, on the Apple TV SDK, you know, I was kind of 50-50 on that, you know, whether or not Apple was going to release that. But that probably goes back to my original thought process with the Apple TV, where I've always felt that that was a platform where Apple was going to invite and sort of handpick selected developers to develop apps, specific apps that made sense for that platform first, before they sort of opened it up to other developers. So I always feel that they're, and I think we could still see that happen this year. So I know, Ken, you said you were a little disappointed you didn't see a full blown just, you know, release to any developer who wants to develop something, an SDK for the Apple TV. But I can imagine that Apple, maybe even at the show right now, is having some private meetings with select developers to say, hey, you know, PBS, we really want to bring your app to the Apple TV. We have this SDK that we're developing. Would you like to help us pilot this thing? And I do think that could happen. Same thing with some select game developers and certain genres and platforms seem to make sense for the Apple TV. And Apple's always been sort of slow moving on the Apple TV on the the other side of it, in terms of like just content or doing an actual piece of hardware television, I think the problem still there for Apple is that the studios and the cable companies and all those old relationships are just too strong and taking too long for Apple to sort of break down and break into, and they can't really plow forward with that initiative until some of that stuff is resolved. And I just don't know that, you know, HBO and a lot of the content providers are ready to break away from the cable companies and play ball with Apple.
Well, HBO's not going to.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah. I mean, HBO's not going to do that, and that's going to be fine. I mean, I'm honestly kind of on the opposite end of that as far as I don't think Apple needs to break down those content deals. I don't think Apple needs to break down the networks or break down the cable providers. I think there are a number of providers out there that would love to get their applications onto something like the Apple television. Mm-hmm. And even though it's going to be B content, I mean, this is Netflix. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about not the home shopping network, because that's utter crap.
Netflix. Well, I mean, PBS, well, no. PBS would be a great example, right? I mean, PBS, why isn't PBS,
PBS would
on
be a good example. PBS would be a good example. Just name a stupid network. Sci-fi.
I mean, TBS.
TBS. Okay, TBS.
Don't call sci-fi a stupid network.
Oh, come on.
We're
going to
get
please.
Lots of emails.
Sharktopus? Come on, dude. Seriously. I mean, there's some great stuff on sci-fi. There's some great stuff on sci-fi, but a lot of the stuff on sci-fi is crap. I love Warehouse 13. Susan's a big fan of Eureka.
Eureka rocks.
Sharktopus. Really?
I don't know about that.
Any made for sci-fi movie tends to be kind of, even the Dune movies, and I like Dune, you know. So anyway, all of that aside, I don't think they need to break that down. I think all they need to do is go ahead and open up an SDK, and then people who want to get more eyeballs will go ahead and start putting their stuff on Apple TV, and that I think is what's going to tip it. If they're waiting for NBC to wake up and smell the coffee, they're going to be waiting a very long time. But if they go ahead and they get, you know, I don't know, my TV,
right,
or, you know, any of those kinds of things, or Palladium. Do you know Palladium?
Well, I'll do you one better. And I've been saying this and everybody thinks I'm crazy, is I really think that Apple's going to forego networks altogether and just, you know, pull the Netflix thing with like Arrested Development and some of the other shows and just, you know, reach out directly to content creators the way they did with I mean, look what happened. Okay, I'll give you a great example. Look what happened with podcasting, right? Apple opens up podcasting. All these indie guys get on there and it's getting huge. And then immediately what happens?
What?
All the big guys start. Wait a minute. There's something going on over here. We need to be on this thing, right?
Nah.
And now, you know, like it or not, whether we like it or not, you go to iTunes now and you look for podcasts. And it's either, you know, major known networks and content providers sort of in the top there, or those guys that have been banding together and forming networks. Podcast networks.
And that may, in fact, be what Steve Jobs' plan was in the beginning. Who knows? Back in 2005, when he brought podcast to iTunes, that may have been part of his plan, is getting into the television
was.
Or getting into something like that. Because I don't know if you remember, but the day after he introduced podcast to iTunes, who did he do his interview with? ABC.
Yeah.
It was a podcast put out by ABC. Yeah, yeah. Hotbed of podcasting is ABC.
Exactly. No, but I think they'll do the same thing with TV and TV content. For sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
I agree, except I don't think that happens with ABC, NBC, CBS. I think you're right. It happens, or I think it's
happens
a combination
with Joss Whedon. Second,
what I was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, except that Tim Cook said at the D10 that Apple's not going to produce their own content.
No, I don't think they have to.
I believe him when he says stuff more than I believe Jobs when he says stuff.
No, but I believe Tim Cook in that regard too. But I do think that there is a whole group of very talented people who have ideas for shows and content with smaller budgets who are willing to take a risk, and they just need a delivery platform and a bunch of eyeballs. And that's what Apple can deliver to them is, look, hey, here's a platform. We have, what they say, how many billions of iOS devices now?
365 million iOS devices, 400 million iTunes accounts.
Yeah. So that's a lot of eyeballs that you can sell your content into. And Apple says, you know what? Here's the platform. Throw it on here. We'll take our 30%. You keep whatever the rest you sell it for. We don't care. $1 an episode, $5 an episode, $10 a season, $50 a season, whatever you think it's worth, you sell it for and see if you can make it.
Now, you see, why would you do that instead of an application, though? Why not have Joss Whedon's studio just to put together a Joss Whedon app?
They could do
that
too. So
that Apple doesn't have to get... Well, I think that's what it has to be, though. I don't think Apple can make content deals because eventually they will want to play with CBS, ABC, NBC in ways that are bigger than they are currently. So I think they have to make a platform where content providers can come in and just offer their own content. Of course, they'll still check it for porn. Sure. I mean, they'll still do that. And I guess they would still check it for hate speech and things like that as well. But I mean, I don't think they would say, hey, Joss Whedon, come play with us. I think they would rather say, look at this. We have this application that anybody can put up their content, just like podcasting.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Same thing.
Yeah, no. iBooks, TV shows, whatever content you want to put on here, produce it, you price it, we'll help you distribute it and market it.
They'll give you a distribution.
Although
tool.
The marketing's mostly on your end too, by the way. But yeah. Maybe
so
we'll feature
be
you.
Sort of like the price fixing door that they opened but did not urge anybody to walk through. Like that. You know what would be great is if somebody, let's say us, came up with a way that somebody else, let's say all you guys, could charge your own prices. I gotta go. Sorry.
Yeah.
I believe they probably legally skated around that whole thing, but they made it so obvious that they would be able to change their prices. It could be that kind of thing. So technically, they're not acting against the interests of the networks, but they're making it very easy for other people to do so. You're thinking
exactly,
that kind of thing?
Yeah.
All right.
So I was kind of
bummed that we didn't get that today. Sorry. I sound like a crotchety old
man. Me too.
Today.
No, I mean, but I still think we're going there.
Yeah.
I still think we get there, but.
I just thought it would happen when you had all the developers in the, well, not all of them. I mean, when you actually only had about 1% of the developers that wouldn't be there.
That could actually get in, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But I really thought it would happen when you had your largest collection of developers together. But maybe you're right. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe they start off with just a few and then say, and now we'll make it available for everybody. And then, you know, WWDC 2013.
Let the spoon feedings continue.
It explodes. No, you know, they open it up and it explodes because everybody's going to be chomping at the bit because they're going to see so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that. I want to do that. Well, by the same token, so another thing we didn't see SDK-wise that I'm hearing a lot of buzz from developers who are at the conference right now that they're a little bit miffed about is Siri. No, yeah. Siri API.
Do you think Siri is going to be done being a? Is Siri going to be done being a beta in iOS 6, or is it still going to be a beta?
I think it's still beta.
Me too.
That's crazy. I mean, fine, but that's crazy.
It's not soup yet.
Okay.
It isn't.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, the AI is not soup. It's not. I mean, it's getting close to being soup. It kind of starting to smell. You get that waft from the kitchen, but. You know, they're being very selective about what they put out there in Siri and they're, you know, even what they demo in Siri, you know, so
yeah.
I think it's just not even close to soup yet. And I don't think it's about computing power. I think it's about the Siri engine, you know, and how much their data centers can hold. I mean, how many countries are they adding? They need to get that root functionality. So when I use it, damn thing actually works 5 times out of 6.
I'll tell you that sports score stuff is sweet.
Oh, I heard somebody asking, why would they do that? I'm like, hello. You know, everybody wants to
know. You
know
many
know
executives and guys are just going
to
be like, oh, I got to have that phone.
Everybody wants to know this.
Made me wish I liked more than one sport.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's like I can ask it about hockey and then, you know, it'll say, 6 more months. Forget it. I don't even talk about that.
Horse racing, for God's sakes, and where the money is, you know.
You don't want to get into the hockey thing again?
No, I'm good. I'm good to not get into a hockey thing. I had another question about Siri, though, and I'm hoping you can actually answer this for me because it sounds like I'm kvetching, but I'm assuming that there is actually a real technical reason for it. I'll use Cantonese and Mandarin, or I'll use Cantonese specifically. Mm-hmm. They're opening up Cantonese for China. For Siri, mm-hmm. And that's great. The Cantonese people that I know, the Cantonese-speaking people that I know, lived in Boston. There's a huge Cantonese-speaking population in Toronto. And there's a huge Cantonese-speaking population in San Francisco. I mean, there are Cantonese speakers all over the place. Just like there are Spanish speakers, I feel certain, in Canada. But mm-hmm. There's no Spanish for Canada. There's no Cantonese for the U.S. Why is regional? I mean, is there no way that I can hop on and say, I know I live, you know, in Chinatown in San Francisco, but I'd really like to be able to speak Cantonese to my phone.
Right. So, I found that odd too, that they specifically called out, you know, it was this for this region and that region. I was getting the gist that it was more of a dialect, a regional dialect thing. So is it like an accent thing? So if you speak Cantonese, I honestly don't know.
I don't know.
With Canadian English and U.S. English, it's, you know, a very obvious thing.
I wish I had an answer to that question. And maybe if anybody, you know, I guess we could call a developer. My assumption was that it had to do with the server farm to which the question was being sent. Because everything that happens in Siri, you know, doesn't happen on your phone. It goes elsewhere and then comes back.
I didn't even think about it that way. You know,
If I'm a Cantonese speaker living in Toronto, how do they route me?
Right. No. Right. I think you hit it on the head. I think that's exactly right. What new servers come in Oregon? So that'll help. New server farm. So that might help the Canadian Cantonese equation that you have. I know in Spanish it's a matter of grammatic rules. You know, it's slightly different between. Right. Mexican Spanish and traditional Spanish.
Yeah, I thought that was the only difference. So if you happen to speak a certain dialect of Cantonese and you live in Canada, right. I think it would still work just fine. I don't think you don't have access to Siri in that language, because I think it's tied into, again, I've never tried this, but I always assumed it was tied into the language you picked for your device. So if I say I'm, you know, Chinese Cantonese, then that's the language it's going to understand.
I just hope you can add languages, like, you know, for me, that I'll be able to add Siri in Spanish as well as in English, like I can in my keyboard. You know, like on my keyboard, I can switch between English and Spanish. I use that feature all the time, you know, but I want to be able to do it with my voice, because if I want to talk Espanol to Siri, I should be able to do that.
Do you have, that wouldn't help though, because we already know that we have Spanish in the U.S. anyway.
Yeah, Spanish.
Darn it.
In the U.S. But I want to be able to do it. I want to make sure that they let me turn on both switches so that I can speak either language. That would be nice.
either language and switch back and forth without going into the settings, or?
Yeah, just like I can with a keyboard. I mean, with a keyboard, I do have to press one button to change it from my English to Spanish keyboard. But as soon as I do that, it knows all my Spanish grammatical rules.
I know, and with Siri, you have to go into the settings, I believe.
Okay, so even if I had to turn it off, okay. But it would be fun. I'd like to listen to some of
But there's no reason why couldn't you Siri let you voice change that setting.
There you go. Español ahora.
Yeah.
English now.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Isn't it listening in a different language? I mean, it's
well,
not.
You'd like, have to say it in I, the I current language. You would have to say it in the current language it was set in, but you should be able to toggle it back and forth with a voice command. Why not?
Yeah, you're right.
Same way you
right.
can tell it your name, or hey, right. my brother's name is this, and my sister's name is that. I mean, it's similar.
Right, but I can't say to English Siri, je m'appelle Ken.
No, but you could say, Siri, I'm going, you know, I'm going to talk to you in French now. Yeah. It sounds
Siri
silly,
say,
but I mean,
and Siri would say that really turns me on.
Exactly. It sounds silly, but I mean, that's kind of how it works, right?
Morticia.
Well, one would think so. I don't know, but I mean, I guess this is the question, and maybe I'm just an idiot about how Siri works. But I mean, I guess that's my question. When they said Cantonese for China, did they mean if you speak this, you know, if you speak this dialect, is that what they were trying to say? Or were they saying if you're in China, you're going to have access to Cantonese, and if you're in the U.S., you're not? Because if that's what they're saying, then I don't think you would be able to tell Siri, hey, switch yourself over to French. Do you see what I mean? Because unless I happen to live in a place that supports it.
Which in Canada would be a huge problem, right? I mean, because in Canada, they can speak French French 1 minute and English the next minute often, right. And they do.
I really think it's just a dialect.
All right.
Small differences in regional dialect things. Certain words and phrases are not the same in Taiwan as China or Hong Kong. I don't know. That was my guess at it.
We were talking about things that didn't deliver. What about all of our pro brethren?
That was the other biggie.
What?
But what it was, exactly?
There was there was an update. I'm so cruel about, you know, with the Mac Pro thing. I come off as being cruel, but I'm not. I really get it, and I understand that community and their outrage, and I feel their pain, and I totally understand why they're outraged, and I think they should be upset. But by the same token, I can totally see Apple's side of the equation as well.
They shouldn't be surprised. They may be outraged, but they shouldn't be surprised.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Go back. There was a speed bump to the Mac Pro.
It was less than token.
Less than token. No Thunderbolt. No USB 3.
Yeah, they didn't.
No new architecture. Pathetic. I mean, it might as well have been called the slap in the face Mac Pro.
Yeah, it was pathetic.
No, the slap in the face Mac Pro would have been the one where they don't do anything to the Mac Pro.
Well, okay.
Hey, shout out to the 17-inch MacBook Pro people.
Yeah, huh? That's right.
Basically,
I think there is less love for that.
The 17-inch MacBook Pro, that thing was always ridiculous anyway.
Well, not to the people who love it.
I know, but send me emails. I had one. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, you did.
I don't know. If it was my only machine, I think I would want it.
It was ginormous. You might as well have just been carrying around an iMac at that point. Get one of those bags like the original Mac, you know, that came in. You had that big shoulder bag that you put the little, take your handle and put it in there. It was kind of like that. It was like going back to 1984.
All right.
Yeah, it's portable. It's got a handle on it.
So you want to talk about something really cool? How about the next generation MacBook Pro?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
That was impressive. And yet they did not, I mean, so much of some of the rumors ended up being true. God bless Apple Insider. They've been saying all year that the MacBook Pro was going to go much thinner. They said that it was going to be like the MacBook Air, which it's not, which is kind of funny because Apple just won a design patent for the MacBook Air, but their newest, thinnest Pro is not borrowing from that. Sure, it can be all flash if you want it to be, or I guess it is all flash.
It is all flash.
But the MacBook Air is still its own separate, very different line. Because I really would have thought that they would have, if they were going to do anything like what they did with the next generation MacBook Pro, that they would have melded the two, and we would have basically ended up with a 15-inch MacBook Air.
Well, we did in a lot of ways, just calling it a MacBook Pro.
Except it's not the same shape.
because it's not a wedge.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's only because they couldn't make it a wedge because they had to fit a certain amount of cooling and other things in there that
batteries.
Yeah,
batteries. Mostly batteries.
It's the Retina display. That's probably that was their biggest challenge because that's going to suck juice like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, but still. It still is a decidedly different looking machine though. You can call it Nair if you want to, but it's not the same shape. So, I mean, they actually, to deliver what they delivered, they decided we're going to keep these two separate lines, right?
Well, it's just not tapered, though. I don't know that's that huge of a difference. I mean, it's the same thickness on the one end.
Oh, dude, Johnny Ive would die right now just so he could spin in his grave to hear you say that. Design matters.
Design absolutely matters.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't know that it's that varied from the Mac.
I don't know that I buy that it's that varied from the MacBook Air.
Really? But I mean, isn't the design the whole part of it? I mean, that's the whole thing, right? I mean, just by not having that taper, it is that different, isn't it?
I think there's two sides. Yeah, there's a visual element, which absolutely is different.
Right.
But then there's the specifications, which are very much similar.
Right.
In a lot of ways.
They're in the same neighborhood. They're dissimilar in
display.
That I think this whole, display for sure. But I think that the new generation MacBook Pro is a whole engineering step forward for them. I mean, a gigantic step. It's not just a little one. It's really a design inside engineering step for them. Anything from the cooling system to the way that they're using RAM. I mean, it's an unheard of amount, 16 gigs in the top end, you know, 3/4 of a terabyte. I mean, those are pretty damn impressive numbers, even if I compare them to top-of-the-line iMac that I have with 16 gigs of RAM. I mean, this machine is a monster, or at least it sure takes out, you know, as far as specs, like a monster.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
you know.
Can I ask a question without sounding like I'm just being argumentative? What's the point of the machine? Is it meant to be a high-end machine, or is this really like we go ahead and we generate enough interest in this that we can start shifting our tooling so that more of our machines look like this going forward? Because what was the tease? It was something like how do we make a better MacBook Pro or something like that? And so this is what they came up with, but it's pretty out of reach for a chunk of people.
I think it says a hell of a lot about how the next iMacs are going to get made.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
the next iMacs, you say?
Yep.
Interesting. Yep.
This is the replace. I think this is their answer to, as much as people don't like it, again, this is their answer to the Mac Pro not getting updated to a certain degree.
And if there ever is the illusional TV, I think it says a hell of a lot about what they can do with screen size and thinness and, you know, laying out of components in, you know, it's a really great first step to be able to put that 15-inch Retina display with 5 million pixels or whatever the heck it has.
5,184,000 pixels, 220 PPI. Just to give the specs for people who missed it, 2880 by 1800 display, 15-inch IPS technology. And there was something about them being able to remove sort of the front glass, so it supposedly has this reduced glare, too. Like, the display is somehow embedded into the bezel or merged with the actual top case, it sounds like, which to me just sounds like really expensive to repair.
And it's all proprietary. I mean, the entire part of the screen is proprietary. So let's think about it in terms of just rumor mill and TVs and that whole thing. You know, they are designing glass, they are designing displays that are completely from the front to the back proprietary. And I think that's why where I go right away is not next generation MacBook Pro, which is hot enough by itself, but it's next generation iMacs, first generation quote unquote TV.
Well, and speaking of redesigning, you know, and designing everything, what about all the attention that was given to the cooling system on this thing?
Isn't that neat?
Like, they spent 2 or 3 minutes on the fans.
It's all about asymmetrical fan blades, baby. That's all I have to say. But think about it. I mean, I think that this thing was that's why it's an engineering feat, is because it's made them rethink every part of the hardware system, and that they can now use what they've learned in a very small scale, which the 15-inch is, to a very large scale, you know, your 27-inch, your 30-inch iMacs or whatever they're going to have in the future, in that kind of a very, very thin form factor. Compared to what's there today, anyways.
What was interesting to me is, in my mind, they pretty much killed the entire Pro line, not just the 17-inch, but to a certain degree the 13 and the 15 MacBook Pro that exists. And those did get a small bump.
Yep.
But I think with how aggressively they priced this thing and with the specs that are on it and just the pricing, to me, says, look, this is what you want to buy. We have these other things,
yeah,
and you're exactly welcome to get those, but this is what we want to sell you.
We're trying to get rid of this other stock, but you can, you know, this is what we want to sell you. Yeah, the top end on that thing is $3,600 or something. I think the I fully loaded the way that I priced it out. It was
pretty
immense amount of money.
I was adding it up as they were, you know, marking off the specs and going through the keynote. You know, I started out, okay, this thing is $2,500. Oh, now it's $2,700, $2,800, $3,000. You know, and then they go, well, it's actually, was it $2,199? Is that what it came in at?
$2,100, yeah. And if you go with everything top end, it's around $3,800.
But even at $2,199, the specs on it, you've got a quad-core i7, 8 gigs of RAM, the new graphics with a gig of video RAM, and 256 gigabytes of flash storage for $2,200.
Sold.
Can't you barely buy this? I guess the storage has come down, but it's like, you know, just the storage on that thing.
I paid...
With the Retina display. Oh, and the Retina display, you know is a big chunk of that change. It'll be interesting to see when they do the teardown, you know, what they think Apple's margin on this is. But I can't imagine at $2,200 that they're getting the typical margins they would get on a machine like this.
But then now we go back to the pro user, the real pro users. you know, you give them this machine, you give them some of the Thunderbolt stuff that even is out there right now, some of the Promise stuff that's out there and so on. And you've got a hell of a great machine to do anything that you're going to certainly do out in the field. Let's say you're in the movie industry and you're doing some stuff in the field, not so much the editing bay, but right. in the field. You've got more machine than you could have ever had with a 17-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, as somebody pointed out to me, I was running a little chat, and I think it was John Foster was kind of pointing out the fact that really, I think I tweeted this too. Apple to me is just saying we're not building machines for that pro video editing market. The guy that is sitting down at a Hollywood studio to post edit video, those guys can get a machine with the same specs, if not better specs, for a lot cheaper than you can with a Mac Pro. You know, like it or not, you know, Mac users are probably going to argue with me on that. Well, we can do this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, if you're piecing together your own system, or you're going to HP or some of these other companies, and you're going to Adobe and Avid, you know, Apple's has just said, look, we're moving towards the consumer prosumer market, which is a much larger market. It's a much larger field for Apple to play in, and they're going to make a lot more money off those users than they are off of the pro users.
Yep, they're
and
done.
The pro users love Apple products, and I think that's why they're upset when this stuff happens. But again, when you go back to the business side of it and you look at it from Apple's, you know, perspective and where they think the future is for these types of systems, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, they're looking at this new ecosystem where it's about personal data and information and access to that stuff. And they see that as the big market moving forward. And that's the market they're moving into. So a certain amount of their old loyal customers are getting left behind. And it is sad to see, but I think the writing was definitely on the wall from this keynote. You know, it's just Apple's like, there's no more, we're not doing Mac Pros anymore. We're doing these things.
Yeah, go get the new MacBook Pro, you know, the next gen one, and have a great time, and get a Promise one, and you know, drive, and you'll be thrilled. I mean,
and you can argue, I mean, for the pro people who are upset by that, 66 million Mac users now, up 3 times
yep.
in the last 5 years.
Yep.
I mean, Apple has served Apple well by being a much more consumer centric company. Even if you as a pro user, even if someone as a pro user is unhappy,
well, with what that
means for them.
At the same time, I think though, Victor, and this also came up in our conversations. If you look at some of the iMacs, and you know, just imagine with these specs, what the new iMacs are going to look like. But if you look at the iMacs and you look at Thunderbolt technology and even the USB 3 technologies and a lot of the technologies that are built into this stuff. You know, there's no reason why this MacBook Pro couldn't be the basis for a desktop system that uses Thunderbolt with external breakout boxes to sort of make up the difference. So if you get creative and you sort of rethink the way that you're doing things, you can build a pro platform and a pro system around this. You just have to rejigger your thinking a little bit. And I think Apple's doing that and saying that at the same time. They're saying, look, here's Thunderbolt.
And you can do that today. I mean, that's how I run my iMac.
It's pricey. And that's the big difference
pricey.
For today.
It is pricey.
Moving that route is you're going to price yourself. So if you're in a big studio and you've got, you know, hundreds of workstations you have to build out, it's just not cost effective. You just can't do it.
And those guys are building PCs now. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're building high-end PCs, and they're doing the editing based using Premiere, and they're using PCs. That's what's happening in that edge of the market. And
we're talking about 1% of, you know, 1%. I don't know what the amount is. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a small percentage of Apple's overall base, unfortunately.
But there are less than 5,000 pro film editors that use, you know, that were using Final Cut.
And Please, no one misunderstand. I'd love that platform, and I wish Apple would stay in that market. But I can see why they're choosing not to. As much as I don't like them moving out of it, because I think they pioneered it. So then that's just salt in the wound for a lot of people.
Anyways,
sorry.
Moving on, as Apple would say, I think.
Yeah. So we covered the kind of MacBook Pros and the new. The new machine, the new MacBook Pro, the Retina MacBook Pro. Do you think does the display change the game in a lot of ways or not? I mean, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be gorgeous.
I think the only way, I mean, it goes back to the question that I was asking earlier. I mean, is it just going to create the demand, or is it going to get their tools working so that they can actually lower the price on the parts so that they can get a better margin, so that they can bring Retina displays, so they can bring all of these things down to the computers that are sort of at the lower end?
Yeah, I think it's that.
Because I don't know I don't know how much of a game changer it is for people who are cost conscious. And not everybody who buys a Mac is cost conscious, but some people who buy Macs are. Mm-hmm. And as much as they might want the next generation MacBook Pro, or if, is that the official name?
I think so.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's Apple's new scheme. It's the new MacBook Pro.
The new. Not to be confused with the other new MacBook Pro.
Exactly.
But the next generation MacBook Pro, or whatever it's going to be, the new Wii MacBook Pro. I mean, as much as a lot of people might like that, there are going to be people who just can't afford it. But mm-hmm. if it generates the kind of buzz, or if it gets enough parts into the stream, I mean, if it brings enough of the proper types of manufacturers online, because there are going to be other computer makers that are going to try to match it. They're not necessarily going to be able to, but they're going to try to. And so a lot of these parts that right now you can only find, or mostly only find, in the new or next generation MacBook Pro, maybe they're cheaper next year, and so maybe it comes down. If you're asking if I think everybody's going to buy that machine because of the Retina display, I don't think everybody can.
No.
I don't think a lot of people can justify it. My eyes are not as good as they used to be, but I still don't have a problem with my computer screen.
Yep.
As beautiful as another one might be, it's not worth an extra, I guess it would have been $700. Now, certainly there are other things that would be better about that machine too. It's not just about the Retina display, but the Retina display would not have been enough to push me in that direction.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head though, and this is the same way that Apple, you know, went about, I think, driving down prices of flash, you know, flash memory, which they really wanted to do, in the same way that they've driven down the price of touch panels for smartphone displays and stuff like that, is they throw this machine out there and they know now every one of their competitors is going to be calling their suppliers in Taiwan and China and Vietnam or wherever they are and saying, we want these components because we want to build the same thing.
Right.
And that huge demand is going to drive, more so than demand directly from Apple customers, it's that demand from all their competitors that's going to drive their component costs down. And Apple's already sealed the deals to say, look, we're going to buy X, you know, hundreds of thousands of these at this price. So they already have a good price. And when it comes up for renegotiation a year from now, demand's going to be that much higher and they're going to be able to command an even better price.
Right.
Sorry, Victor.
But because the panel is proprietary from front to back, they can't just go to those manufacturers and say, I want the same thing. It's all proprietary. Well,
there are other things happening in that space, though, that should make the panels come down. Did you guys see the Willow Glass thing that Corning has?
Mm-mm.
Oh, go to my Posterous page. Not right now, because you're doing something, but go to my Posterous page, macoscan.posterous.com. I don't normally, you know, whatever, but I have a link to it there. It is this glass that's super strong and it's flexible. Like, they actually show somebody bending it, like holding a sheet of glass between thumb and forefinger, but not, it's bent. I mean, like a card, like a piece of paper. So they're holding one end is being held by their thumb. The other end is being held by their finger, and the glass is making this perfect bow. And they're able to roll the glass out like newsprint. What's it called? A hot roll press, I believe, is the production manner that they talk about. But they're basically able to roll the glass out like a piece of paper. So rather than having to move sheets of glass and worry about breakage, they're now able to produce glass, roll it up in a roll, and send it out. Try breaking a roll of glass, especially glass that's already, you know, that bendy and flexible. So once Corning actually gets moving on that, and they've already started production, I don't know how big production is, but once they get moving on that, it's Katie bar the door as far as display is concerned. And they're actually saying that it's thinner as well, so you're going to be able to put, of course, Apple says they're using two sheets now instead of three from the new next generation MacBook Pro. But they were saying that you're actually going to be able to put the three sheets of glass in, I want to say, the same space as either two of them or one of them. So they were already looking at reducing that. So your cost is already going to come down because they're able to produce it and they're able to ship it in ways that are much less expensive. Mm-hmm. And it's much more flexible. I mean, they're talking about displays, you know, I mean, they're just insane displays. I mean, it's going to make Microsoft Surface look stupid. I mean, in ways that Microsoft Surface, you know, Microsoft Surface had some promise. I don't think it delivered. And part of the problem is you actually need a whole big setup. And this is going to wipe that away. I mean, larger displays, smaller displays, this could actually be where your TV becomes a lot more interesting, it seems to me, because, I mean, you can just, I mean, not like not as easy as with a paper cutter, but you can just roll off the size that you need rather than, okay, I need you to produce for me a 60-inch piece of glass. No, I need you to produce for me a roll of glass, and I'm going to cut off 60 inches of it.
Wow.
It's, I mean, it's, there are so many ways that this is about to get 1,000 times better and 1,000 times more interesting. And also there's the whole durability thing. I mean, when you've got a piece of glass that you can literally bend and still treat as a piece of glass and see through as a piece of glass and have the same scratch resistance as the piece of glass, you're not quite to the place where you can throw an iPhone on the ground, but you're getting closer.
You're getting, yeah.
And the same thing with your computer and your TV and your, you know, whatever the next display thing is.
It's funny you're mentioning different, you know, the glass and things getting thinner and stuff like that, because something I've been thinking about is one of those next hurdles for Apple to tackle on getting the stuff thinner is connectors. I mean, have you guys noticed that the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air and all these things are starting to get limited physically by the size of the connectors in terms of how thin they can get? As a matter of fact, they have a MagSafe 2 connector.
MagSafe 2.
And the only difference is they had to make it smaller. And, you know, we've heard about them going to a smaller dock connector for the next generation iPhone. I think we're not far from headphone jacks, I think, completely going away with stereo Bluetooth and especially the new low-power Bluetooth 4.0, you know, that takes less battery. So I think over the next couple of years, we're going to see a slow disintegration of the number of connectors on these devices. You know, a lot of people often want more connectors, but no Ethernet, right?
Ethernet's gone.
But you got a dongle with Thunderbolt, you know, and there is a version of Thunderbolt that carries power, right? So you could imagine that Thunderbolt carries power and data and display and, you know, a bunch of other stuff. So you could end up with just some sort of even smaller micro Thunderbolt connector at one point, and that's the only thing that you have for a lot of these devices.
Yeah, and you also have already dual bus Thunderbolt. I mean, people are like, well, you know, what do I attach to my first Thunderbolt pole? But now these guys are coming out with a two bus Thunderbolt because they know that's about to explode. I mean, you know, 2013 is going to be Thunderbolt year.
Well, do you think so? Or, I mean, has Apple sort of hedged their bets with USB 3? Because, I mean, that was a big part of today's announcements, too, is many, you know, Apple's first machines with USB 3. And I think it was just a natural evolution. They already had the chipsets that would support it, you know, so I think they kind of had to make that move. But are they hedging their bets, or because it's been so slow with Thunderbolt rolling out, or is it just a natural progression? I don't know which story I would
believe. It's built into the chipset. What are they going to say? We don't want it. We want you to disable the capability.
Wouldn't be beyond them to say, look, we're supporting Thunderbolt, and that's what we think the future is, not USB 3. I wouldn't put it past them, but obviously they didn't go that route. So that's why today I was sort of questioning. I was like, are they just saying, okay, you know, USB 3 might take off and we need to have this on our systems? Or, I don't know, it just seemed odd to me. Because they were all Thunderbolt, and then Thunderbolt just seems like it's been a really slow uptake.
It's slow.
Incredibly slow uptake.
Getting the uptake is taking,
I think it's partially,
so long.
Is it partially Apple's fault, or is that all on Intel in terms of the licensing?
From the little I understand, it is then the engineering and Intel and the licensing and the cost to actually produce the chipsets. And then, you know, that just needs to come down. Once it does, it's going to be a dramatic change, but it's just not fair. And remember, we're only talking about the copper version. We're not even talking about the real Thunderbolt, which is...
You're not talking about Lightpeak.
It's Lightpeak. Thank you, Ken, for reminding me of what that was called.
And they're really
the real Thunderbolt.
They're really for two different purposes, too. I think a lot of people get confused, you know, and think that Thunderbolt is for a lot of things that it's probably not really ideal for.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, it sort of goes back to the question that I was asking about the next generation MacBook Pro, right? I mean, as people start buying Thunderbolt stuff, demand goes up. people are able to get lower component costs, prices go down, more people start buying it. The problem is getting the first people on board is kind of difficult because, I mean, unless you're a pro user,
you got to have a use case.
All you can say is faster, right?
Yeah, you have to have a use
case. And there are some people who want faster because they want faster, but then most people who are buying peripherals are, again, I mean, they're looking at cost. And I'm not saying they're all poor. I'm not saying they're all looking for the cheapest thing they can get, but if all you can say is faster, then I think, you know, if you're looking at a difference of $200, $300 in a peripheral, I think there's a place where you hit fast enough.
It's not just faster, though. Like, you know, I had a couple of eSATA drives that were sitting there doing nothing now that I had an iMac. And because Alesis came out with the Thunderbolt eSATA interface, boom, all of a sudden those drives were viable again. You know, and they're plenty fast at the speed that they're going.
Yeah, see, the thing is, though, here's what's funny to me. Though your show was called The Typical Mac User, dude.
Yeah. I didn't say I was the typical Mac user.
Okay, yeah. I mean, because the kind of thing that you're talking about, I mean, that is definitely handy for someone like you. Yeah. For somebody who likes to tinker a bit, who likes to find solutions, or for somebody who is a bit more of a professional user than maybe even they realize. For the general consumer, though, I mean, that's not them. And so as neat as – I mean, it's weird. With Thunderbolt, you've got two things going on. You've got Apple saying, hey, pro group, this is awesome. And then you've also got Apple saying, not that we really care much about you, and we're not going to be making as many machines for you. But if you want to cobble together your own machine, hey, pro group, this is for you. And so I don't know. I mean, it didn't feel like an admission of failure on Apple's part to include USB 3. But I mean, the other thing is a lot of stuff is going to be USB 3 that the average consumer goes out and buys,
and
right?
Wants to buy. Exactly. It's, yeah. Like your time machine backup drive on USB 3 is going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the other question is, I mean, in a couple of years, is the average consumer really going to understand the difference between USB 2 and USB 3? Or are they going to see a USB connector and think, oh, well, that's good? I mean, it almost feels like Apple has to put in USB 3 because if the market does go USB 3, you don't want to be fielding a bunch of angry calls from people saying, well, my USB port doesn't work.
Right.
Well, yeah,
right.
It does, but we just decided not to make it work with the new stuff that's coming out.
Well, what was odd and something I didn't understand is USB 3 was always USB 2, you know, backwards compatible to USB 2.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you could always take a USB 2 device and plug it. It was my understanding you could take a USB 2 device and plug it into a USB 3, but then at the keynote today, they pointed out that many companies were actually creating separate USB 3 and USB 2 ports on their devices. And I don't know if that's maybe because I think technology-wise, if you put a USB 2 device in the chain with a USB 3, it might suffer from that sort of slowdown effect. Do you guys know anything about that? I haven't looked into it enough.
USB 3, never had it on a Mac.
Yeah, I think they tried to keep them on separate buses for that sort of reason. But I think it was fully compatible. I think you can plug, and you know, as Apple pointed out, they just have the one port that will do USB 2 or USB 3. But I don't think that's an Apple thing. I think that's part of the USB 3 spec, that it was always backwards compatible anyway. So I don't know that they did anything truly innovative there other than just to say we're only going to have one connector.
Well, I mean, unless it was to keep people from plugging USB 2 stuff into USB 3 ports. I mean, are you saying that a USB 2 peripheral would work in a USB 3 port?
Yeah. Yes. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think the other manufacturers put, where they would say, this is a USB 3 port and this is USB 2 port. And they told people that because I think you suffer some performance loss if you put a USB 2 device in a chain with a USB 3 device. In terms of throughput, but the average consumer is not going to probably even know the difference or notice it. I mean, really, most people don't care. Again, if I'm plugging in my backup drive and it's running in the middle of the night, I'm not going to know if it's going at 480 megabits per second or 40 megabits per second. I'm just going to know that the backup's done when I wake up.
Yep.
The biggest issue is if Apple had not supported USB 3, then somebody goes out and they buy a LaCie drive, property of Seagate, I believe, at this point.
Right.
They go out and they buy a LaCie drive that's USB 3, and they plug it into their USB 2 port, and that doesn't do anything. And so Apple saved themselves a world of hurt by going ahead and using USB 3,
yes.
Even if
the
they
answer.
End up doubling down on Thunderbolt.
That's
and I don't
answer.
Know that they will, but yeah, okay. Because in 5 years, they've now got three times as many consumers with whom to deal.
Yep.
They wouldn't be dealing with 22 million angry people at this point. They'd be dealing with 66 million angry people, and who needs that in their coffee?
Now we've done the same thing as the keynote. We've gotten an hour in, and we've still got like two more things to cover, two more major things to cover.
What's up with Scott Forstall's hair? Was that one of them?
Scott Forstall's hair.
Hair Force One. What was that guy's name? That was very funny.
Craig Federini.
Yeah, but okay, sure.
I have a hard time with his last name.
No, but we all know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Not since Chris Breen has there been such good hair associated with Apple. Not that Chris Breen worked at Apple, but you get the idea.
Yeah, I think it's Federini.
Okay. What were your two things? I'm sorry. I assume it was not actually hair care.
It's Mountain. We got to talk about the software. We've talked all about the hardware. We got to talk about the two major software announcements. Or, you know, they gave us a little more hints about Mountain Lion, macOS 10.8, and iOS 6. So we probably should start with Mountain Lion because they covered that first. And probably the biggest surprise to me was we're going to get it next month. I wasn't expecting it till the end of the summer.
Well, it has. I mean, although thinking back, that will be a year, right? It was July of last year that they gave it to us, and I'm with you.
I thought it was going to be something like that.
I thought it was going to be closer to the end of the summer, but you're right. It's
they're on a yearly release cycle, and I guess they're pretty serious about that.
Seem to be. And the other thing is $19.99 upgrading all the way from Snow Leopard.
Yeah, I mean that doesn't surprise me. They want people off of Snow Leopard and moving forward. The funny dichotomy on that is, did you guys catch the other spec where they said at the beginning of it 40% of OS 10 users are running Lion? 40%. Yep. They made that sound like it was a big deal because they compared it to Windows conversions, but to me that seems actually kind of low.
That's a low number.
for Mac users, at least historically, as far as I remember, you know, a lot of us used to, when it wasn't a yearly, and it may be because they've gone to this more rapid upgrade cycle, you know, despite the pricing. I mean, the pricing makes it easy, an easy decision to upgrade or not. But I think, you know, when Lion came out and had the number of issues that it had, a lot of people held off. So it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully there's enough fixes in Mountain Lion to get the Snow Leopard users to say, okay, yep, I'm gonna upgrade now.
I've heard definitely more than one time that, you know, Lion was like Apple's Vista. And although I don't agree with it 100%, I agree with it some percent, you know, more than 50.
The only thing they need to solve, in my opinion, in Mountain Lion is the sort of resource hog that Lion seems to be for whatever reason.
It doesn't multitask as good as I thought it would. That's the problem I have with that.
Exactly, yeah.
This machine with 16 gigs of RAMs, and I still have trouble, you know, doing multitasking on things, you know, like iMovie, which should be no problem. It should be, you know, not an issue at all. But when I have that running along with, you know, a couple other programs, it has I don't think it's as slick. What is it, Grand Central? I don't think that's as slick as it was toted to be.
The point is that, you know, I have a modern machine. You have a modern machine. I have lots of RAM. You have lots of RAM, and it's not at peak performance. And you know, what about the people that just have, you know, a machine that's a couple years old that on the specs it says, yeah, Lion will run it, and you load it on there, and your machine goes from being something that's useful and you get work done on to actually just being a dog.
Yeah, well, unlike us, six out of 10 of them don't have it.
Yeah. And now you're looking at my iMac. It's running Snow Leopard.
Right.
I didn't go up to Lion because I didn't want to, you know,
deal with that stuff. Yeah, and for good reason. So if they don't fix anything else in Mountain Lion, if it had no new features and they just said, this is Lion, but running the way it should have run,
that would be nice.
Do very, very well with it. But we'll have to see on that.
40% in a year is not bad. I mean, 40% in 12 months.
Compared to their competitors, it's phenomenal. And that's, I think that's what they pointed out. I mean, the uptake on that. But you compare that to the uptake on iOS, which was 80%.
Yeah.
And the fact that they almost gave it away. You know, I think they wanted a bigger number than that because they almost gave the damn thing away compared to their competitors. Which you're having to pay $179, whatever the heck, even the smallest license is for a Windows machine.
I think the distribution model hurt them, too. I think a lot of people were leery about the download-only thing, and I think we're probably over that. So I do expect Mountain Lion to do a little bit better than that. It won't surprise me if we get to 10.9 and they say we had a 45%, 50%, 60% uptake on Mountain Lion.
Plus, it's $10 less too.
Yeah.
Which is not a huge deal, but I mean, $20. I mean, who doesn't? Well, I probably still won't upgrade my iMac unless I'm buying another machine.
Can I point out a really odd thing? And I just want to know, what is this magic 200 number in terms of features? Have you noticed, like, every operating system update, iOS, OS 10 or otherwise, for the last, like, seems like 3 or 4 years, over 200 new features? That's like their target number. If it doesn't have 200 new features, it's not ready to ship.
Well, who wants over 100?
Oh, 199. We can't ship it.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear, 173 features, you know. Although Augustrometer, last year, Augustrometer said that he's fairly convinced that, at least 50 of those might have to do with kerning. I mean,
Yeah.
They really make up some of them. It's funny when you get down to
200. Yeah.
Nitty gritty.
200 plus anyways, Adam. That's the magic number, 200 plus.
The dock is 2 pixels higher.
and glass. Not real glass, but glass.
That is one of the features. I am pretty sure one of the 200 features. Yeah, dock has new glass.
The one guy said, Game Center, that'll get us to 200. I know it.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the real things that are in there. I mean, iCloud, does that do anything for you guys? I just want documents in the cloud.
Documents in the cloud properly, does, yeah.
Please.
Yep.
You know?
Just make it work.
And that at least there is a SDK for developers. So that could be a nice new feature. But, I mean, that's more of that iOS-ification or whatever you want to call it. The migrating, moving us to this. That's one of those baby steps, I think, that you were talking about, Ken, where, you're just going to open the app and there's your documents for that app.
Right.
Device.
It's weird to me to talk about them independently at this point.
Yeah.
And that may sound goofy. I mean, and maybe I'm ahead by a year or two, but it's weird to talk about them independently at this point, because so much was about that demonstration that Air Force One did, where he, changed the document on his iPhone. I've already forgotten his name again.
Craig Federini,
thank you. That demonstration that he did, where he changed document on his iPhone and it automatically updated to his Mac, and that was a feature of OS 10, he said. But that's really a feature of integrated information.
Oh, and it might be Federighi.
Okay.
Federighi.
Air Force One. Come on, it was their joke. It was their joke. Air Force One.
I think it's Federighi.
Federighi.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, one of the things that he demonstrated, again, this is why it seems weird to talk about them independently at this point, even though, they happen independently and they're on different machines technically. He showed one of the features of the new Mac operating system using his iPhone.
Can he show almost all of them? I mean, we can go down the line. Notification Center. Dictation. Yep. Sharing. Yep. Safari. iCloud tabs. Yep. Tab view. Yep. AirPlay mirroring.
Yep.
Game Center?
Yes.
they're all in both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're all about integrating
they're
both.
All, because they're all becoming one. Right. That's why.
Because it's all about right. Because, and eventually, and it's really fascinating. I hipped you guys to Willow Glass earlier. I didn't know about the low power Bluetooth. If you're telling me that that's actually going to replace the headphones that are shipping with an iPhone, then I can actually talk to Siri and have Siri tell me stuff without having to look at my screen. And that, it seems to me, is the ball game. At that point, it's access to your information even when you don't have a way to access your information.
Yeah.
As far as like being able to stop and look at it.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say people. This is that latency I was talking about earlier. Go ahead. Yeah.
It goes to building Siri into, is it 9 different car manufacturers in the next 12 months?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 9.
Yeah. That's okay, really? So we can do that with the iPhone in the car. I mean, we've got to be able to do that walking down the street too, right? And so if you've got a Bluetooth headset and not looking at stuff, I mean, if it's going to give me eyes free, then it should give me eyes free everywhere. And then it's exciting. And I guess this is why I get frustrated, because I'm excited about what's coming. And forgive me, I get a little impatient. There should come a time when, I walk up to somebody who's speaking Cantonese and Siri tells me what they're saying when they're talking to me. Now, of course, I could eavesdrop at that point, but I mean, we're getting to that point, right? Where barriers not only to information retrieval, but to communication are falling by the wayside. And so then what you have to work on is dropping the price a bit, which, I mean, this is not part of this discussion, but fascinating that prepaid, that the iPhone is now going prepaid. That you okay, no subsidy, fine, if you don't have to, if you don't mind not signing it to your contract, or if you're willing to not sign it to your contract and pay a full price. Does that actually end up dropping the price of the iPhone at all? Because we've all assumed that it was the $200 subsidy, but if people actually start buying it that way, does the price of that come down a bit more? And then do we have access to all of these features across all socioeconomic classes rather than just, you know, the people who have been made fun of as idiots for standing in line for 6 hours for a phone? Or the people who are willing to pay $800 the first year or $600 the first year, however much it was. It's all incredibly exciting. I'm sorry, I got so distracted there. I apologize. I'm way off track.
I was just going to say, you know, can you imagine when we might have the little pin that we can put on that's a Siri button? You press and you hold it, and then it beeps, and then you talk to it and ask it, you know, to do something for you, and then it does it.
Ooh, and then like a spy movie. One day they'll just be like a safety word. Where you just say something, oh, lovely rhododendron, and then Siri's listening.
Remember a TV show from the 70s that was sort of like that, right?
What's your Siri say for?
Tap the little pin on your chest and give the command to the computer.
I remember one from the 80s.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one you're... Yeah.
Well, but even, gosh, you were talking about features that are like for like, even the new features for China are the same, you know?
Well, that is a huge thing, in my opinion. Apple went throughout and said, you know, we've got all these new features for China. And I think that was them clearly signaling that is the next big market for them. It should be. I mean, rightfully it should be. And they're going to make a ton of money in China. And they were definitely in this keynote stressing that we are moving into that market in a big way. And we're going to make sure that, you know, that market has feature parity on a lot of these things. And that wasn't surprising to me at all. And I think that was a huge part of this announcement. If you were like an investor listening to this thing, I mean, that'd be a key thing say, look, Apple's making the right move here.
So can you think WWDC Shenzhen in what, 2018?
Very, very possible.
Will it make you feel better, Ken, if we call this iOS Mountain Lion?
Huh?
Instead of iOS 6, iOS Mountain Lion.
Yeah, just call it iOS Mountain Lion. So
I actually did, and this is one of those stupid things that you do when you think nobody's listening because they're not, because it's happening inside your head, but now I'm going to say it out loud, so it's dumb. I'm trying to figure out what the combined operating system is going to be called. You obviously can't call it the Mac operating system because that runs on an iPhone, but you can't call it iOS because that's going to upset the Mac people. You should not run iOS on the Mac. So you got to come up with a unified name.
The new OS.
Next generation OS.
The new OS. That's
OS, the next generation. Going back to what Adam was talking about.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I rocked that around and just...
So was there anything particular, I mean, beyond... I don't know that there was anything in Mountain Lion, in the Mountain Lion demo, that I was like oohing and aahing over. I was excited about Documents in the Cloud, in my opinion, that needed to be part of a Lion update that never came. So that's sort of like a bug fix. The Notification Center and stuff like that was pretty cool, but I think that was not surprising. Again, dictation, same kind of thing. The sharing was kind of cool. I particularly like the fact that the sharing, you know, the share button works in Quick Look, which... to me is interesting because that means anything that in the Finder that I can quick look, like an image or a video or something like that, can now readily be shared with different services like Twitter and Messenger. And I'm assuming at some point Facebook. It was interesting that Facebook wasn't part of Facebook integration wasn't part of Mountain Lion, but is an integral part of iOS 6.
Was it not part of Mountain Lion?
I don't know. They show it. They show it as part of Mountain Lion.
Did they show Facebook integration in Mountain Lion? I don't remember seeing that.
They do on the What's New in Mountain Lion page.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Facebook, here's a great status update. Yep.
I was kind of looking when they were bringing up that little sharing sheet, and I didn't think I saw a Facebook button there. But
built-in Facebook support, post photos, links, comments, locations. Just sign in once.
Again, going back to your point, this may really be the secret integration of the two operating systems in disguise. They just put different labels on them, and put them out in different app stores.
We haven't heard developers lose their minds yet about having to write, you know, for one operating system, or be glad that they're writing for one operating system. And what's his name? The Fed. said that originally the people who were making the racing game that he demonstrated with Game Center were just going to put out an iOS app, but then they said, "Oh no, you should do a Mac version too." And they found it was so incredibly easy to port it to the other one, so they were happy with that.
Here is my concern. My only concern there, and maybe it won't be a concern depending upon how the interfaces work out. You know, if it becomes voice and multi-touch as your kind of interface, maybe this becomes a moot point. But in a lot of ways, some of these early apps that I've seen that have made that leap from iOS, and I've expressed this in the past, from iOS to the desktop, and I think Game Center is a prime example of this. If you look at Apple's Game Center, it looks like the iOS Game Center running in an emulator, an iOS emulator on the Mac.
Yeah.
And it's just like this weird window
thing. It looks cheesy.
Yeah, it looks really cheesy, and I've seen some apps that are like that too. And I don't want to see that sort of thing happening. I do want the experience to be appropriate for the device that you're having that experience on. You know, to that end, one of the cool things that I thought Apple did very well was integrating notifications into the full screen apps. I'll give you a good example of, you know, where Apple's done it well is where they've thought about, you know, if you're in a full screen app and you're going to get a notification, how does that work?
You mean with it sliding down in the upper corner and then just going away if you ignore it?
Sliding down and going away, but also, what was the other thing he was showing in the demo that I was really impressed by? Sort of responding to those sorts of things and interacting with them. I think it had to do with sharing a photo in iPhoto. So you would select the photo and say, I want to share it out on messages. It comes up in a little sheet. You put up your message thing, and then you hit send, and it sort of goes off into the background and sends, and then gives you a little, you know, kind of pop-up notification, hey, I sent this. But you never break out of the full-screen mode of iPhoto. It's not like you have to flip over to the application and then flip back or some weird thing like that. It was sort of all seamless and integrated. You know, it just looked like it was built, in essence, it was, because it was built into the operating system, but it's sort of just layered on and built into the application that you're currently in. But it's really part of the OS. So they've just done it in a really smart way, I think. And I was I was impressed by that. Because it could have been really kludgy and clunky, and it wasn't.
So I'm excited again now. Thank you. You actually, I mean, really, I'm excited. I'm sorry that I was so impatient earlier today. And I'm actually very excited about where we're headed.
Well, I'm excited.
I'll give you another great one. A lot of people were complaining about Siri and, you know, not having the open API, but the stuff that they added into Siri in iOS 6 and bringing that finally to the iPad now, just the new iPad, which I know that's going to upset some people.
Yeah.
But.
Yep.
But it's really kind of cool, useful stuff. And I think, you know, the sports scores, I think people are going to be using quite frequently. And I think Victor alluded to this earlier, too, though. Like the restaurant data, that was a little bit of a, you know, in the better integration of Yelp. It's awesome stuff. That was all in there.
It was all in Siri, the first version. Yeah.
So some of these features are like coming back to Siri, the features that we took out. But I think those had to do with Apple probably had to renegotiate deals with Yelp, renegotiate deals with OpenTable for data. Does anybody know, have we heard where the sports score data and stuff is coming from? I think.
No, I was really curious about that, actually. I was curious about that because, you know, who's taller, LeBron James or Kobe? And it knows that you're talking about LeBron James and Kobe Bryant. That was kind of impressive. And then it puts up baseball cards for both of them. Well, they don't play baseball. So, I'm curious what database that was. I certainly hope, maybe I hope that Apple can, you know, just do those things on the fly. But my assumption is they've got some sort of database built someplace.
They did those in a really, really nice, you know, way too, in just terms of the presentation. And so the fact that you don't, again, that's another one of those integration points. You notice a lot of the new Siri features, you don't have to break out of the Siri interface until you absolutely need to, which is really nice. So you can stay really on the lock screen. You can stay, you know, sort of in the mode that you're in. They did the same thing with the maps and the turn-by-turn directions. That's a huge one for a lot of people. I guess the other thing about this keynote to point out is Apple seems to have obsoleted or, again, encroached on the area of a lot of third-party apps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Developers were dropping left and right, man, with some of this stuff. I mean, you know, yeah. Technologies.
We say that, but, you know, the fact is Apple really, I think they've always kind of done this where they're going to give you sort of the core features in a category. So I have a feeling, you know, they're turn by turn, which looks really nice. I don't know that it's going to have every feature of every turn by turn directions app. Like, you know, there's those ones that give you where the speed traps are and where, you know, certain other bits of information. Yeah. There's things that Apple's just not going to do out of the box for free. They're doing some amazing things, but, you know, I think there's always going to be room for a third party app, even in those spaces. You know, think about Instapaper and like, you know, they now have off. They said they're going to have offline reading list for reading list. Have you guys used reading list?
Yes, reading list love is still, reading list.
I like it, and I use it for certain things, but I use Instapaper or Pocket in a whole different way. So in my world, the two don't really compete. They're sort of used by me for different purposes. I would never throw something into reading list where I really wanted to just sort of come back and have a whole experience where I was going through a bunch of articles, because I just don't like how the interface looks. Works. Yeah, it's, I feel like I'm back in Safari, and it's just sort of overlaid, and it's to me a little kludgy. I like the app experience that Instapaper creates for reading long form articles, and I can sit down, you know, and have a cup of coffee in the morning or two and just read a bunch of really long form articles, and that's sort of what I use Instapaper for. So I really don't see them competing. I like the fact, though, that out of the box, Apple is giving a lot of this functionality, because I think those are the kinds of things that get people in the door. And then they start discovering the third-party apps. So in some ways, I think it, in this really odd, weird way in my mind, it might even help some developers, because it gets more people on the platform.
There was, maybe I just haven't seen this part yet, or maybe I missed it. I don't know what my deal is with this, but Tim Chatton was saying that there's no public transportation in Apple's map feature. Do you guys?
He made a point at the end of it saying that there is an SDK, what they call it, the transit app or something, part of the SDK, so that transit companies could plug in their stuff into the mapping data. So when you're in the Maps app and you need transit information, you can have that launch a third-party app or something like that. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but they just were saying, look, we don't do transit stuff that well, or we didn't want to get into that. You know, there's going to be apps for that, but you'll be able to plug into it. So there's some sort of hook, and I don't know specifically how that works, but yeah, they were saying something to that degree.
You know, I'm really excited about AirPlay, reverse AirPlay on the Mountain Line. That's going to be fantastic, like for teachers and conference rooms and stuff like that. I mean, it's really, really going to make a huge difference to a lot of people who use Mac, like my wife on a daily basis. You know, she's in an overhead at school, and right now she has to have it tied in, wired someplace or another for it to go in her overhead and being able to sit at her desk now. I mean, just a little thing like that is going to make a huge difference for her.
Yeah. Yeah, the maps are, I'm very excited about the maps and the mapping data and the amazing, and they just look beautiful, and if they work as well as they were demoed, it's going to be really, really cool. The other thing that I want to bring up, and maybe we can even end on this, because I think overall, I've been talking to a couple people, and it came up on a podcast that I was at, that there's a lot of people that are often sort of looking at Tim Cook and putting him in Steve Jobs' shadow. And what was the quote? Somebody said on this podcast, and I'm going to get it wrong, but it was something to the degree is, you know, too bad Tim Cook's not Steve Jobs, but you know what? Tim Cook is a really damn good Tim Cook. And I really felt in this keynote, he and the whole team kind of came out, and they really shined, and they really showed, I think, that Apple is going to be a little more open about exposing some of their more touchy-feely kind of philanthropic efforts and things that they do. Did you guys notice there was a big focus on sort of some of the education? They had that whole piece on autism, and they did a lot about their accessibility stuff, which they should be really proud of.
They should be.
Because I've had a number of people in that community on the podcast to talk about some of the breakthrough efforts that Apple's done in accessibility. So it was nice to see them sort of tooting their own horn. That's something that they haven't done in the past. And I think that is a big thing. That's a big part of Tim Cook. And in a couple moments, Tim Cook got, you know, a little emotional. I think we saw this in the D10 interview, too. He is really passionate. If there was any question of anybody about his commitment to Apple as a company and their philosophy, any of those people on the executive board or on the executive team, that was completely erased, in my opinion, by this keynote. You know, can tell that these guys are all in it, you know, from Cook to Ive to Forstall to even Federighi. We're going to mutilate his name. I got to go back and listen to it. Yeah. I think they really showed the kind of passion they have for this. Schiller, too.
I think again, going back to Passbook, I think it's going to be like the breakout, the thing that we're going to say, wow, you know, this thing wasn't paid that much attention to. And a year from now, it's going to be just huge. You know, Passbook is going to be the keys to the kingdom as far as us caring, you know, a lot of money or not, a lack thereof.
I really like my Starbucks app, though. I have to admit, I use my Starbucks card on my Starbucks app, so it's going to be interesting to move that into
a new... It's going to be integrated right to it, yeah.
So I don't need my Starbucks app anymore?
Nope, because...
That was the only feature I use in that app.
They're showing the Starbucks thing right there. I mean, I'm excited about, you know, airlines.
Airline tickets and stuff,
that kind of stuff, movie tickets, airlines, I mean, all that kind of stuff. It's going to be just really, really the start of something huge, I think.
Yeah. I think credit cards aren't far behind that.
No, they can't be.
Sorry, Ken.
Going back to your other point, Adam, I honestly did not feel that quite as much off of Tim Cook today. There was a conference call, though, a couple of years ago, an investor call. And it was one of the ones, I think, when Jobs was on not his last medical leave, or maybe it was his last medical leave. I can't remember. It seems like it was a couple of years ago, though, where he did 5 minutes. And I read it, or maybe it wasn't 5 minutes, maybe it was only three, but I read it verbatim. I actually transcribed it and read it verbatim on my show because my comment at the end of it was, you know, if you're worried about what kind of hands Apple will be in when Steve Jobs is no longer CEO, don't.
Yeah.
I mean, his passion, and he can be a fairly understated kind of guy. And honestly, there were a couple of times today, and I feel like a drama critic now, there were a couple of times today where I felt like his emotion was a little practiced. But it doesn't worry me because, I mean, he is hard. I mean, you can't do a Steve Jobs keynote. You can't. And people are still looking for him to do a Steve Jobs keynote. Even if I didn't feel it today on the stage, though, I mean, his passion is there and palpable at the right moments. And, you know, find that conference call, whichever one it was. And I probably still have it. He's stunningly passionate about the company, which is, you know, you expect Jobs to be because it was Jobs' baby.
Right.
And you expect Forstall to be because Forstall, you know, came back into Apple. I mean, rode sort of that wave, you know, with Jobs. Mm-hmm. Tim Cook had careers before Apple. And you know, he may eventually leave and he may eventually go do something else, but that's not the feeling that I get. I mean, the feeling that I get is he's there, you know, until they take him out.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. And, you know, the other side of that is I just want people to kind of, it's time to just let Tim Cook be Tim Cook and take the reins and you know, give him the credit where he gets the credit and sort of let him make his mistakes where he might make his mistakes. But so far, I think if you look, you go back and look at everything he's done in the past couple years, you know, he's definitely guiding the company where it needs to be guided. And I think he believes in that vision. So, you know, I just want to make sure we're giving the guy the credit rather than always comparing him to somebody else, which seems to be happening a lot in our community.
Do you want to be sacrilegious now? what's going to be especially exciting is when the messes that maybe were made by former CEO are cleaned. Mm-hmm. And whether they end up being cleaned in court or whether they end up being cleaned up out of court. I mean, there's so much of Apple news right now. That is the distraction of trying to destroy Android, and I don't even think Tim Cook wants to destroy Android. I mean, Android's destroying Android. That thing that Forstall put up on the screen, saying we're at 80% penetration with iOS 5 on iOS devices. We're at 80%. About the same time last year, Ice Cream Sandwich came out, and they're at 7%. with their latest operating system. And I understand why Jobs wanted to destroy Android, but he could have just let it happen. It turns out. Now, nobody knew that at the time. Nobody knew that when he started his, you know, gigantic. I mean, there was a chance. There was a real possibility that Android was going to. And Android, in some ways, has stymied iOS because its adoption rate across the country is much bigger. But as far as a real user experience and as far as what's generating actual revenue, it's iOS. And I kind of look forward to the day where not only do you have the whole. Well, is this what Steve Jobs would have done? But then also when we finally got sort of the ugly parts that are still hanging on cleared away as well. Because it's not just going to be, ooh, Tim Cook released a crappy product. It's going to be, ooh, Tim Cook released a crappy product and he's got all of these lawsuits. And, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to, you're right, it's time to let Tim Cook be Tim Cook. I'm looking forward to when he really can be in all aspects of the business, not just, you know, how do you do on stage?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's sacrilege. So there.
I the funniest part to me about all those Android numbers, and I don't think it's sacrilege.
No.
But the funniest thing to me about all those Android numbers and those comparisons and stuff like that is I think there's still a lot of people out there that just don't get that Apple doesn't even really. I mean, they throw the numbers up there to kind of, I think, poke fun of it. But I mean, even Scott Forstall knows that overall the market share of Android is more in terms of a percentage. In terms of the operating system is more than iOS, but what he's pointing out there is the fragmentation, right? And so only 7% because there's only certain devices that can run this sort of thing. But then when push comes to shove at the end of the day, I don't think they care because you know what? Android isn't changing things. Android isn't changing the world. It's just sort of towing the line and following what Apple's doing. And so Apple would be completely happy with 1% of the market share if they were making the best devices and the best operating system on the planet. And I think that's what they're out to do, and that's what they are doing. So it's just, in Apple's world, it just doesn't even matter. It's more outside their world where we like to analyze and overanalyze that, those sorts of numbers. But, you know, they look at their stock. I'm saying Apple looks at their stock price and they look at the great devices and the great technologies that they bring to market and how they're changing lives, how they're making it so that a blind person can walk in the woods outside their house. And that, at the end of the day, means a heck of a lot more to them than whether or not they have more market share than Android. I really believe that.
I nearly cried after watching that video. It's stupid. I've been making a lot of fun of myself today, too. I nearly cried after watching that video. It really was neat to see a company saying, look at the way that we are changing people's lives. And, you know, well done to Shayad Day or whoever put that together, because I know somebody who knows something about making people cry put that together. But well done, sir. Well done.
The thing is I don't even feel bad about that, because I do think that Apple as a company, most of the people working there believe that that's why they're there building those things. And making this technology. I really do. And maybe I'm, you know, call me a fanboy or whatever you want to, but I don't know. I've bought into that. And I believe it. So that's why I use these machines over others and pay a little bit more, because I believe in that vision. But there you go. Overall, though, overwhelmed at this point, tired. I don't know how you guys feel. But very excited. I mean, I everything that I saw today, I was sort of very excited about. I don't think I was really disappointed about anything. You know, I understand the disappointment in certain areas with things like, you know, not having an updated Mac Pro and stuff like that. But in terms of just where Apple's moving and their vision, even if they're not getting there as fast as we think, or at least telling us they're getting there as fast as we think they should, I think they're doing all the right things. And I think, again, they've leapfrogged ahead, and we're going to spend the next 6 months watching everybody sort of copy and catch up.
Just in time for iOS something Lion 7.
Yeah. Well, iPhones, right? We got iPhones in the fall.
Coming up.
New hardware. But I just want to get through Mountain Lion and some new MacBooks before then.
Plenty to keep us busy.
Cool. All right, we got anything else to talk about, or are we out of here?
That's it for me.
Long enough. All right. Say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
So I guess it was more like an hour and a half on that, but that's great stuff. I mean, unbelievable how much stuff Apple put out kind of all at once. You know, it's like Apple just builds this stuff up now and then just sort of throws it all on us all at the same time so that we can just all, our, you know, as geeks and fans can just freak out. And it was a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun, a lot of great announcements. In that segment, I have to admit now, we recorded that right after, well, the evening after the WWDC keynote on Monday. It's now getting into the evening on Tuesday, and some more information has come out regarding the Mac Pros. And see, I'm already wrong. Apple has said and confirmed to Macworld and Forbes, as well as there was an email to Tim Cook that said they are working on a new Mac Pro. Pro customers are really important to us, and we're going to have something for you in 2013. I find those two statements to be a little bit contradictory. I don't know why it's taking them so long to bring out a new machine for their Pro customers. I think that shows that they're not putting them to the head of the class, but that's just where my opinion falls on it. And it's key to remember a lot of times when we're talking about these things, especially in these types of episodes, I'm sharing my opinion and my thoughts. It just seems to me that Apple is not given that Pro love that they used to, and they need to step it up a little bit more. But if you can hold out, if you can wait until early 2013, I don't know if they said if it was going to be early or late. You would hope it would be early in 2013. They are promising something new. So hopefully that's a little better news for you Mac Pro fans out there. If you want to give me any feedback on this, if you want to email me and say, Adam, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about, I'd love to hear that. I love audio comments. If you agree with me, don't agree with me, whatever, please send that stuff along. I really like hearing from you. This is really a two-way street, this community. You know that if you've been around for a while, and we'll get you on. We'll play your feedback and comments on a future episode for sure. Now, before I totally leave you, I do need to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors for the month. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software, get more information and details over at circusponies.com. Phoronix, check out Deep Freeze. You can get information on that and more details as well as trials over at phoronix.com. Smile, check out Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, PDF Pen for the iPad, and Text Expander Touch. Awesome applications, good stuff from Smile Software. You can find all the details on that, and as well as get free trials over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle, you can get cash for your old iOS devices, your old Mac gear. If you want to update to one of those new MacBook Pros, this might be a good time to check out gazelle.com. And if you want to bling out the screen of your iOS device, the home screen, the lock screen, check out Pimp Your Screen, available now for just 99 cents on the App Store. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you for your support, for listening, for staying subscribed. Again, if you have any feedback for me, any comments, suggestions, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode, please send your emails, your audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on our listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is TheMacCast. And be sure to check out the MacCast.com website. There you'll find show notes and links to stuff we've talked about on the MacCast. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. If you'd like to follow me online between shows, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or check out the MacCast Facebook page. Like us over there, and that's at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.